You're listening to The People Show with Seth, Dan, and Randeep on Sportsnet 650.
People Show, hour number two. Canucks and Pittsburgh Penguins tomorrow night at Rogers Arena. Hockey night in Canada, Sidney Crosby in town. Brian Burke, Pittsburgh Penguins president of hockey ops, will join us in a few moments here on the People's Show. People are now, Yannick is so popular when he joins the People's Show that they're starting to think of nicknames for Yannick.
Yeah, we had Yanhan earlier.
Yeah.
Yep.
Earn from Nanaimo coming with the Hanser.
The Hanser. That's not bad. It's not bad. I mean, he does remind me of
Allen Iverson.
The answer? Yeah, the Danish version of it.
He's not Allen Iverson.
He's got his own loafers.
No.
You see him walking around town with a headband on. Yeah. You know, it's the Hanser, yes. Yannick Hanson.
But I totally lost my train of thought.
I totally threw you off with that one.
No idea.
No idea. All right. Earn from Nanaimo coming in with the Hanser.
We got Steve here as well from Shawnigan Lake saying, I believe that Yannick Hanson has a better understanding of our players than Jim Benning does.
Oof, poor Jim.
We should get Yannick as our new president or coach, but I do like green.
I do like green. Yeah. Han Solo is the one that just came in.
Han Solo. Hannigan.
You know, he does remind me of Jan Maas from Ted Lasso.
Yes.
He's just so honest.
The Dutch player who's just like always honest.
Yeah, no matter
just
what.
Just totally deadpan, doesn't have any other, like has no inflection, no, yeah. Just, you know,
yeah,
it is
terrible.
What it is.
You were terrible today.
Yeah. No, you're actually terrible.
You're right, yes.
It's a pretty good comparison there. I like it.
Just says no time for, you know, fluffing
BS.
fluffing up the truth.
No time for BS. Like our next guest, actually.
That's true. Waiting on Brian Burke. So,
Hannigan.
Quinn Hughes and Luke Shen. We played the clip just before Yannick came on. He talked about it. Why is this working? Why is Luke Shen working with Quinn Hughes right now?
Well, honestly, it's because he gets out of the way half the time.
Yeah.
You know, and when you just kind of know the strengths of somebody else and you know kind of where to be, it's not I'm not downplaying Luke Shen's role, but I think there takes a level of humility and understanding of your own abilities and understanding of how to be successful in the NHL that he just knows how to play off a really talented player like Quinn Hughes. And half the time, it's just him being in the right spot. That's all it is. He's not counted on to make a breakout pass often. He's not counted on to rush the puck out up the ice. But a lot of the time, there's going to be a lot of space for him. So when people are putting more attention on Quinn Hughes, it makes it easier for Luke Shen when he has the puck on a stick to make a play, because usually he'll have an extra beat to do so. And if he has an extra beat, he can make a fine pass. He can skate it up and dump it off and do the safe thing. So I think he understands his limitations and he understands what to do and find availability for Quinn Hughes, who gets a lot of the attention. I just think a lot of it really comes down to just simple chemistry and a good innate understanding mentally of the game from Luke Shen. Because if he's playing with anybody else, there is no way he's getting those results because he can't do what he's doing right now. He would be forced into doing things he's not capable of. But the thing with playing with Quinn Hughes is you're not asked to do anything you're not capable of doing.
Simply know thyself, right?
Yes.
Like he knows exactly what he is. And if you look back at his Tampa Bay experience, playing on the left-hand side, opposite of him, whenever he was in the lineup, Victor Hedman. When you're playing with Victor Hedman, just do your job. When you're playing next to Ryan McDonagh, guy can handle the puck, he can make a pass, you kind of simplify it. Sergachev. Yeah, all of these guys can handle the puck and they can take care of things. You just do what you're good at, right? And all of those players on the left-hand side, you know, Luke Shen was playing with. So I think that's a good experience where you're looking at, you know, the past and essentially saying, just knowing, allowing special players to do special things when you're playing next to them, and you fill the void. Where they have their gaps, that's where you step in. And Shen has been able to do that, not only this year, but look at his, you know, experience in Tampa Bay when he was jumping in kind of sparingly or not being used every single game. He was playing next to some special guys, and he knew exactly what to do.
There is, like, obviously, Shen isn't the most mobile of defensemen. Nobody's going to make that argument. But And we saw that, you know, from early in training camp. You know, you could see where the weaknesses are in his game. He's not the oldest guy, but there is some limitations there. And while I know that those are real factors here, and there are going to be moments where you're like, "Oof, Luke, that's not something you can avoid entirely." But this is all that matters. Who is Quinn Hughes playing the best with? Who is he most comfortable with?
And on this team, yes.
That's the only thing that matters to me.
Yeah.
Nothing else. Like, I don't care what the other person's contract looks like. How is Quinn Hughes playing with his partner? Who is he having more success with? And the sample size is pretty obvious. Luke Shen, like, Quinn Hughes is far closer to the player we expect him to be when he's playing with Luke Shen than he has been with Tucker Poolman. And we just, obviously with Hamonic, we haven't seen it enough this year. But, you know, even at times last year, it took Quinn and Hamonic some time to really gain any sort of chemistry. Almost took until like mid-season last year.
Well, and the peak of what we've seen with Shen and Quinn is better than the peak of what we saw with Hamonic and
right.
Quinn, right? And Hamonic is a very similar player to Luke Shen. Big, physical, will drop the gloves if need be, that type of a player. Richard texts in and says, let's face it, it works because Shen provides a level of protection that Quinn needs so he can be himself and not always be worried about getting run. He's a small guy and people would take advantage of it if there's no fear factor. And I get it, the physicality stuff too, but the best partner Quinn ever had was Chris Tanev, who's not a physical player.
Yeah.
So, yes, part of it, you know, could be having a big physical player. It makes, you know, the opponent be a bit more honest and all that sort of stuff. I'm sure that plays a part into it. But as far as actually having the success, there is more to it as far as the chemistry goes and knowing how to play off of him, right? And with Luke Shen, I think it's more of him doing less. Because what have we said about Hamonic at times? YOLO Hamonic. All of a sudden, Hamonic feels like he's out there. He's trying to make plays.
He's
trying to dangle
guys.
He's jumping in on the forecheck. It's like, if you're playing with Quinn Hughes, you can't do those things. You
yeah.
know what I mean? Like, you got to be the guy that sits back. You have to be the guy that,
yeah.
you know, is going to be a bit more conservative. You can't all of a sudden think that you're trying to do the same thing Quinn does, right? And that's why Myers and Quinn doesn't work outside of trying to generate offense. It's a disaster defensively, right? So, part of it, yes, yeah, perhaps the physicality and all that sort of stuff, but I think it's mostly about their chemistry and Luke Shen just simply knowing where to be half the time.
You know, defensive pairings are based on trust, right? Can you trust that player next to you to make the right decision, whether that's carrying the puck, you know, less in this case that Luke Shen, but when he's needed, he can make that play. Chris Tanev was great at that, where, you know, underrated for moving the puck.
Mm-hmm.
We all see him as a shot blocker and all that, and, killing penalties, but he could move the puck up. He's doing it well in Calgary right now as well. So that trust element, when you have somebody who's solid, you know what they're able to do, you can predict what they're going to be able to do, that builds that trust to say, I don't have to doubt that next player next to me because I kind of get an idea what he's going to do. With Tucker Poolman, with Travis Hamonic, you don't have that trust. You don't know what Tucker Poolman's going to do on a shift-to-shift base. You know, you don't know if he's going to make that pass to Bo Horvat or hit him in the skates. You don't know if he's going to pinch. So I think when you are looking at some of the best pairings that we've seen over the last few years, especially with guys that are so offensively minded, having that trust is key to say, hey, I'm going to go YOLO mode every now and then, as you put it, right? Or I'm going to go rove a little bit, but I know you're going to be back here. And you haven't had that from those other two players. Shen does give you that because Shen knows. He's not in the NHL because he's going to do that. That goal was nice last game. We're going to applaud it because he took advantage of, you know, Formanton, but Luke Shen knows he's not going to score another goal like that probably for the rest of his career, right?
Yeah.
He knows exactly what he is.
He knows he's not that guy.
No, but that situation is also a perfect example of he was given a lane.
Took it.
And
awareness.
He took it.
Yeah.
Right? And, you know, if you are patient playing with a guy like Quinn Hughes, you're going to get yours. There is going to be opportunities for you. But if you keep it simple,
teams are going to cheat, especially when you're Luke Shen and he's
exactly.
Quinn Hughes, right?
So eventually you're going to get a chance to flash your hands a little bit and get a shot on goal, right? And that's what guys like Hamonic and Poolman have to understand when you're playing with Quinn. It's like, it's about him. It's not about you. You'll get your chance when it arrives every once in a while. But can you have that patience and play that way? Jake the Plumber texts in and says, Shen and Hughes work because Shen does the kiss, keep it simple, stupid. And I do think a lot of it comes down to that. Like, it's not overly complicated the way Luke Shen is playing right now.
You're not that guy, pal. Trust me. You're not that guy.
Everybody's favorite clip. All right, so we've been working on Brian Burke. Hopefully, we'll be able to get him at some point during the show today. Might have to push it back to 5 o'clock. So just an update there for the citizens of the People's Show on Berkey.
Okay, so you just made that analogy of, like, he's not the star, and then knowing, yeah, I love rap. So if you're saying, the defensive unit is G-Unit,
yeah,
Quinn Hughes is 50 Cent. What is Travis Hamnick, Young Buck, Lloyd Banks are the other guys, Tony Yayo?
Like, who's Lloyd Banks?
You guys figure it out for the rest of you, but we know that Quinn Hughes is 50 Cent. That's the key here.
So we look at the rest of Canada right now, and the Canucks just went through Montreal and Ottawa. And in case you were wondering, there are situations that are going about as poorly as it has for Vancouver, if not worse. Ottawa did get a win last night. Their goalie made about 1,000 saves in order to make it happen. But it happened, and Montreal jerseys are now being thrown on the ice. Though Jeff Gorton spoke today and maybe provide some hope for the future with that team. But Toronto is maybe the hot, well, they are the hottest team in the league right now. The Flames keep winning games, beat the LA Kings last night. Alex Edler finally scoring his 100th. I was thinking maybe Jacob Markstrom did him a solid there. Just a thought. But
he had like a half stand-up technique on that goal, didn't he? Kind of reminded me of like Bill Ranford back in the day.
It did not look like Jacob Markstrom. I'm just throwing that out there. But Calgary and Edmonton are tops in the Pacific Division right now. And of course, you know, Winnipeg, while they've been going through it a little bit, you know, we know that they've got a pretty good team as well. If we were to power rank the top Canadian teams right now, how would it look? Let's start at number 4. And why is it the Winnipeg Jets at number 4?
Because they're simply not as good as those other teams. I think you know how we said it's not overly complicated why Luke Shen's playing well with Quinn Hughes? I don't think it's overly complicated why we have the Jets down there. And part of the reason, too, is the Jets are kind of scuffling and underperforming. You kind of wonder, you know, at the very least, the other teams are peaking or playing at a high level. The Jets haven't found that level.
No, they haven't. And, you know, shockingly, it's their offense. Blake Wheeler is looking just like the Blake Wheeler of last year. Old. He's not looking all that great. Offensively, he's struggling. They still have Nick Ehlers. They have Mark Scheifele. But they can't get goals, guys. That's the shocking thing about that, where they have a, you know, a top six group that in the Western Conference is up there with some of the best. But they can't get goals. And that's where you're looking at a situation to say, okay, defensively, they haven't been great, but at least you know they're going to be able to pour in goals. That has simply not been the case. So I look at that team, and number 4, it is the Jets. And you start to wonder how much patience they have in that market, right? Because this is supposed to be their big move. Mm-hmm. They got off to a great start, but Colorado's going to catch up. St. Louis is staying consistent. You know, you have other Central Division teams like the Minnesota Wild that are showing they're for real. At what point does Winnipeg really start falling off here?
What's surprising about their offense, right? Because with all the guys that they have, and Kyle Connor's been great for them this year, Dubois's been off to a good start relatively, but they've got just 39 goals at 5-on-5. That, you know, barely puts them into the top 20 in the league, you know, and that's, you know, they are definitely doing better from a process perspective and controlling chances. I think the moves they made on defense with Dillon and Schmidt have had the desired effect from a defensive standpoint, but the offense just isn't quite clicking the way that you hoped it would. And until it does, yeah, they are going to be a distant fourth behind Toronto, Edmonton, and Calgary because, like, fellas, those teams have been that damn good this year. Like, I know people don't want to gush all over Toronto, but they've been really strong of late. I know they're, as Kevin Woodley has mentioned, they do give up a ton of chances going back the other way, and Jack Campbell has saved their behinds more than once. But, you know, they are really coming together as a team. It's going to be prove it time in the playoffs, of course. But the idea of, oh, we're going to have to worry about making the playoffs in the ultra-competitive Atlantic Division, like, doesn't look like Toronto's going to be worrying about that.
No, I mean, we always know they're a good regular season team,
yeah.
Right? I mean, they're one of the best regular season teams. They have been the past few years. That's not the concern. It's what happens to them once the postseason comes and how much of their game that we're seeing is going to be able to translate to the postseason.
Yeah.
That's what we haven't seen. And even last year, the problem with that team was evident heading into the playoffs, that a lot of the flaws they had the years prior were still there. And once they got to the playoffs, they were exposed yet again. Are they going to be able to overcome those flaws this year when they head into the postseason? That's the bigger question. But if you look at how they've played overall, I do think the Leafs have done a better job this year compared to the years past and kind of limiting, you know, not limiting, but generating more. Like, they're still a team that gives up their chances, but they generate chances better than maybe any team in the National Hockey League does. So they really lean into that identity. But come postseason time, are you going to be able to play a style that you can't give up as many chances because you're not going to create as many chances? And can you win doing that? And so far, it looks like the same Leafs from last year, but...
Well, they weren't scoring at first, but now, like, the shooting percentage has come around for them.
And their big stars are going to get their points, but it's the value bets that they made on guys like Michael Bunting and Andrei Kasha that are really paying dividends, right? Like, that next level of, all right, who are these stars and who are they going to be playing with? Oh, okay, Bunting. They're giving Bunting a shot.
Not just a bunch of old guys.
No, they're like yeah, they have Jason Spezza there, who is actually producing, which is kind of shocking. But the fact that he, you know, Kyle Dubas did go out and get some of these guys that were looked upon favorably, but you're saying, wait a second, these guys might be playing top six. That might be a bit of a stretch. Those guys are working. And I look at Bunting and Kasha started off the season quite slow. The question I have, though, is there are certain matchups that don't work well for the Toronto Maple Leafs. And we've seen the Pittsburgh Penguins are a team that they don't like playing against.
Yeah.
Pittsburgh is, you know, defensively quite disciplined. They can lock down the stars. So there are certain matchups that don't work well with Toronto still. But as of right now, are they a top three team in the Canadian, you know, rankings? Absolutely. I probably got them at number three because what's going on out west right now, especially in Calgary, which I did not think would be going on. Like, Calgary ain't to be messed with, man.
No. See, I'm kind of torn between Edmonton and Toronto at number three because I think both teams have similar flaws, right? Yeah. The Leafs play very high event hockey, but they generate a lot at even strength at the very least. Edmonton's a strictly special teams squad, right? Like, they kill it on power play. They're really good on the PK. And by the way, Calgary, Edmonton, and Toronto, all three of those teams have good special teams, good power plays, and a good PK, especially what Edmonton does, right? But Edmonton's very much lives and dies with their special teams.
So much.
And their game overall, defensively, they give up more than they create at even strength. So, you know, I would probably put Edmonton at three because of that reason, because the Leafs have actually shown that they're a bit better at even strength. But I think it's essentially 1A, 1B for that. Like, if I could do the coward bet, I'd be, I got a tie for those two teams, but that's where I have them.
I'll split the difference for Edmonton being at number three for me. And, like, look, their transition game is unbelievable. You see how quickly they move the puck from their own zone, especially when McDavid and Draisaitl are on the ice. It's like the ultimate counterattack maneuver. Two moves, two passes, and they're the other way and bearing down on goal. Like, look at some of the goals that Hyman has scored, even the other night, the quick 2-on-1. Mm-hmm. They're on a 2-on-1 in a flash. They just, when McDavid and Draisaitl are on the ice, their transition game is so deadly. They get a loose puck in their own zone, and a second later, they're on offense, odd man rush, it feels like, because they're so quick when those guys are on the ice. But goals have kind of dried up throughout their lineup, and they are very reliant on their historically good power play. So I can see, again, I could see it more with Edmonton, where we get to the playoffs, the whistle goes away, and all of a sudden, you know, they're struggling again. I can see that more with Edmonton than I do with the Leafs right now, who generate more chances than anybody in the league by a country mile. I know we're only looking at the data on Natural Stat Trick, but there's nobody else that's even close to the Leafs in terms of generating chances offensively at 5-on-5.
But they also give up a ton. Only one team gives up more chances than they do, high danger.
So they're a fun hockey team.
And guys, the best part about the Toronto Maple Leafs discussion is, and we can look at the stats, and that's what we're looking at, but we know when the playoffs come around, it's between the years with them too, right?
Oh, 100%.
And that's where the Edmonton versus Toronto conversation is is a good one because you do have better depth than Edmonton this year, right? We talk about Puljujarvi stepping his game up. He's already this close to be hitting a career high, and we're in December right now. Zach Hyman has changed the game. Even guys like Warren Fogle. Like, Warren Fogle a year ago would probably have been on their first line. Like, he's playing on the third line. So there is an added element of, okay, both of these teams have improved.
Yeah.
And to Sat's point, Toronto gives up a lot too, right?
They do.
Hyman's been perfect for Edmonton. Like, you know, he's just such a smart player. And he complements great players really well, as we saw in Toronto, and now he's doing it in Edmonton. The biggest thing for Edmonton, I think, has been Evan Bouchard. And we've talked about this in the past, but that was a big if for them coming into the season. He has looked the part, and if you look at the numbers with him and Darnell Nurse as a pairing, they've been pretty dominant, right? So if he can get the best out of Darnell Nurse, which was a question mark when they lost Adam Larson, I think that's a huge development that the Oilers have discovered here, because they started the year with Nurse and Barry together. That's moved to Nurse and Bouchard.
The other thing is, though, we had a few questions about Edmonton heading into this year. One was defense. It's been actually pretty decent, despite having so many injuries, right? That left side has been
decimated.
It's been decimated, right? Darnell Nurse, you have obviously Duncan Keith, Cody Ceci ended up on the protocol, and goaltending. I'm not a believer in these guys long-term. I still think Ken Holland has to make a move, but Koskinen hasn't cost them games. Stuart Skinner hasn't cost them games. That's actually a very good sign for the Edmonton Oilers. You still got to pick up a goalie.
Yeah.
But the fact that we're talking about December, a couple months into the season, and they're not costing games, I think that's a thumbs up for this team.
I think it's good, but one thing too, though, I will say, they're pretty much a one-pairing team. Like, I think CeCe and Keith in playoff matchups, Keith might be able to elevate his game a little bit. I still see them having issues. If we're looking straight matchups on that defense, right? And goaltending, I have questions for both teams. And I know Campbell's been good and all that sort of stuff, but both for Edmonton and Toronto, I have some issues with their goaltending. But Edmonton in particular, as you're right, CeCe and those guys have played a lot better. Man, I'd love to get out 5-on-5 against Tyson Barrie in the postseason.
Yeah.
Like, he's a disaster in the playoffs at 5-on-5, right? So that's my biggest concern with them.
As of right now, I think, you're absolutely right. But what do we know about all of these teams, especially Edmonton? They're going to have to pick up a defenseman and a goalie before the deadline. Those are two priorities for this team.
You know what I think we just figured out? We're all ranking Calgary number one.
Ooh. And they should be with a bullet.
Yeah.
They're the most complete. They might be the most complete team in the league right now.
It's crazy.
What was the biggest question we had with them? It was star and talent. Who's going to step up? Because Tkachuk is, iffy based on last
year. Hasn't mattered. They get a little bit from everybody.
Yeah.
Gaudreau's been really good, like a top 20 scorer in the league, but top 10, I think. But, they get scoring from everywhere in their lineup.
The answer to that question, who's their star? It's their system.
Yeah.
Daryl Sutter has them buying into their defensive structure, and their one star happens to be Jacob Markstrom.
Yeah.
Jacob Markstrom is putting up numbers, and he's aided by that defensive system, which is launching into one hell of a counterattack. So when we talk about the collective of this team, I wasn't sure. I thought two things would happen. A, that the Stars would not buy into Daryl Sutter's situation and his structure, and B, the team would implode. The exact opposite has happened.
Yeah.
They do everything.
Everything well.
No exaggeration. They do everything well. They score at even strength. They score on the power play, which is ranked fifth in the league. Their PK is ranked fifth in the league. They generate shots better than any team in the league.
Yeah.
Their high danger scoring chance differential is second best in the league. They create a ton of chances. They score a lot of goals, and they have some of the fewest goals scored against in the league. There is nothing they haven't done well so far this season. Yeah. So if you're saying anybody but Calgary, that's a reach for me, man. Like, Calgary, the way they're... And I hate saying it. It's about Calgary. And who knows how it goes. But if we're power ranking, talking how good do they look, no team in the league is doing everything well as Calgary is. Other teams, like Florida's been great. They have some things to do really, really well. And that's what has them going well. And other teams have performed well. But if you're looking at overall performance at everything, Calgary's got to be the leader.
Their top four on D has just been dominant. Shillington and Tanev has been an incredible pair.
Maybe the best pairing in the league. That's how good they've been.
Yep. And then Rasmus Anderson have been just as good. Close to it.
I got a stat for you.
Yep.
Milan Lucic has more even strength points than Elias Pettersson this year.
Man, there's a lot of players with more.
But this
he doesn't
is a
have
player,
an even strength goal
this
yet.
This is a player that many people a couple of years ago was saying that he was washed.
Yeah.
Right? Now, Daryl Sutter.
I mean, he's a bottom six guy making 5+, but He's giving them
something.
The guy
has 7 goals this year.
Yeah, he's giving them something.
Something. More than something.
I mean, the only two guys, I mean, the only guy really struggling is Sean Monahan.
Yeah.
Right?
And he's been playing on the fourth line.
He has been. And that kind of shows you what Daryl Sutter thinks of Sean Monahan in his game, right? And Michael Backlund hasn't quite been as productive, but he does a lot of things for that team, right?
Yeah, he plays tough minutes.
He does play a lot of tough minutes as well. But, I mean, I think those are the only two guys you can point to. Maybe Blake Coleman.
Yeah.
He's not quite producing for the number, but the role he plays, how good he's been on the PK, and how he wins matchups playing a checking role.
I think with like those two players you mentioned in the back end, Daryl Sutter is fine with the level of production that they have because he knows that they're going to work hard, work really hard every time they're out there.
And they got the bread man. Mangiapane, let's go. 15 goals on the year. Who saw that coming? Can he play for Team Italy at the Olympics, or is he going to be on Team Canada? I don't know.
I don't know. He's got a couple of months to figure out his citizenship real quick.
Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. How do you power rank the Canadian teams that are actually good this year? So that's not Vancouver, Montreal, Ottawa. Let us know on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Up next, Matt Lee and Not Saying, Just Saying on Sportsnet 650.
Now back to The People's Show with Sat, Dan, and Randeep on the official home of the Canucks, Sportsnet 650.
People's Show, Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. You know what? It's time for the People's Trivia.
Oh, yes. Oh, I'm so excited for this one.
Oh, Sat's excited for this
one. I am. Because I mean, I had to sell this one on you guys.
You put the question together today. So for those that may want to send hate mail, it is at Sat Shaw on Twitter.
It's no hate mail.
Okay, the Canucks beat Montreal and Ottawa.
Yeah.
The degree of difficulty is going up when they play Pittsburgh. Kind of the same with trivia today. Let's put it that way.
Well said, Randy. We're just reflecting the pickle the Canucks find themselves in.
People's Trivia, 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. You answer the question there, and you just might win a pair of tickets to the Canucks and LA Kings for December the 6th. Every day on the People's Show, we give you an opportunity to win tickets to an upcoming Canucks game. All right, Sat, what is the question you have for the people today?
Which Canuck scored the overtime winner in April 2001 against the Kings that sent the Canucks to the playoffs that year, 2001? And that player, I'll give you a hint as well, scored 2 goals in that game.
Okay.
I believe it was April 6th.
Oh, I remember it well.
Narrator. No, he doesn't.
It's a very...
I barely remember this one.
No, I mean, hey, listen, Canucks fans know this goal because it sent the West Coast Express into the postseason.
I don't think people need help. There's a lot of hardcore fans out there.
Okay.
Definitely tougher than previous.
Yeah, a little bit tougher.
We had Tyler Toffoli as a question like 3 days ago, man. Come on. That was the easiest question ever.
Yeah.
You chirping my questions now?
Yes, absolutely. I've been doing it for the last couple of years.
It's trivia. It's not supposed to be that difficult.
We're already getting right answers in.
Well, we are, yes.
That's good.
There we go.
Since when are you on Sat's side?
I can't always just you guys tag team and basically, hey, I got to switch it up too. Come on.
Okay. All right.
I agree. I'm a man of the truth, and this is where I stand on it. Oh. Easy.
The truth.
Easy really? Trivia questions.
Really? The truth?
Yep.
Is that what you call
it? Oh, really?
The truth.
Answer the question, 650, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Which Canucks scored the overtime winner in April 2001 against the Kings that sent the Canucks to the playoffs that year? We'll pick one correct answer and send you to the Canucks and Kings into the lower bowl December 6th. Of course, that is Alex Edler's return to Rogers Arena.
100-goal scorer, Alex Edler.
I'm telling you, it was a.
You're saying
it was
that was a groove fastball, is what you're saying.
I mean, Jacob Markstrom is like Vezina contender this year, and it was one of the softer goals he's let in as a Calgary.
Are you suggesting Jacob Markstrom placed an anytime goal bet with Alex Edler?
He was doing his former team a favor. Didn't want to see it happen against the Canucks.
They talked before the game, and he was probably like, man, how long have you been waiting for the 100th goal? Wait, you haven't scored since we were teammates?
Yeah, chatting in the hallway before the games. Sorry, you haven't still scored it yet? Oh, man.
I've always wondered, like, I've felt it happens most in baseball. The grooved fastball. Like
Derek Jeter at the All-Star
You will
game that
never
year, yeah.
convince me that David Price didn't put that ball on a tee for Derek Jeter to hit a home run for his 3,000th hit. You'll never convince me.
I know, because we've been talking about it for, 3 years, and you never let
obvious.
It die.
It's just like first pitch, he just grooves it right down the middle.
Wasn't it Brett Favre and Michael Strahan, too, for the sack record?
Yeah, remember? Michael
same
Strahan.
Thing. He was like, Favre's like, I'm just going to lay down here.
It was like somebody going to bed slow-mo. It's just like, here you go. Where's your pillow?
I'm telling you, it happens.
You don't go after Michael Strahan like it's something about Derek Jeter just ticks you off, clearly.
That commercial is still one of the best ever. Ooh-wee, big old Michael Strahan. all right, Matt Lee, BCLC, joining us on the People's Show. What's up, Matt? How you doing?
I'm doing good, guys. How are you?
Oh, we're excited for the Canucks to be back home. They won a couple of games in a row, so how does that mean the odds are looking on the Canucks these days?
Well, look, guys, you're all happy about the two wins against Ottawa and Montreal, two basement dwellers in the NHL, but that's not going to change much on the books here. The money line for the Canucks going into tomorrow's tilt against Pittsburgh, 2.65. The Penguins, the clear favorite at 1.71. It's a little bit interesting when you look at it, but, you know, the Penguins haven't played since Wednesday night, so they've got two full days of rest against that Canucks team returning from a five-game road trip, which, again, started with that 4-1 loss to Pittsburgh.
Well, and, you know, it's interesting because we came into this season thinking, you know, the Canucks might be a playoff team and all this sort of stuff. And obviously, that's not quite happening. And when we're looking around the National Hockey League, we had a conversation before you joined us, Matt, about the top teams in the National Hockey League Canadian-wise. And we had the Jets at 4, you know, between Edmonton and Toronto at 2 and 3, and then Calgary at number 1. But what are the odds telling us of the chances, the team that has the best chance out of Canada to get to the Cup Final?
All right. Well, right now, the Leafs still have the best chance at winning the Stanley Cup, or at least they have the best odds of winning the Stanley Cup among Canadian teams. They're at 11.0, Oilers behind at 13.0. But you guys alluded to it right there at the top. Here comes the Calgary Flames out of nowhere. They were looking at around in the 30s when the season started, right there with the Canucks, and they've moved up all the way to 21.0. You know, we've seen the story that Daryl Sutter is writing with that club lately. Airtight defense coupled with some quality goaltending in Jacob Markstrom. The Flames are starting to become that trendy sleeper pick if you're looking for some value on the Stanley Cup, especially among Canadian teams.
Okay, the Flames are the sleepers, and the Seahawks are about to be put to sleep because their season is basically done. When you're talking about them against the Niners, is AP helping their odds, Matt?
Is AP even going to be active at this point? I mean, look, if you're signing Adrian Peterson to your practice squad and thinking, this is the answer, I think there's clearly some problems happening in the Seahawks room right now. This offense looks so broken right now. Russell Wilson missed some wide-open targets against Washington on Monday night. Now he's coming off a short week. The Hawks are 2.45 on the money line, and they're 4-point underdogs on Sunday.
I don't know whose talent has been more zapped this year. Is it Russell Wilson or Elias Pettersson? We'll try to find out eventually.
Real quick, the other side story everyone's sort of watching on this game is this going to be a squeaky wheel game for DK Metcalf? Mm. His implied total for yards in this game is at 59.5. Guys, he hasn't had a game with more than 60 yards since week 7. So it's been a long time since DK Metcalf has been unleashed. We know Russell Wilson being out has been part of that. But 59.5 is the line on yards for him on Sunday.
Just 4 targets and 1 catch last week, which is just absolutely bonkers for DK Metcalf. Kansas City and Denver, a sneaky big AFC West matchup here. And I guess we're all believing in KC again because the spread's a lot bigger now than it would have been maybe a couple weeks ago, Matt.
Yeah, it's been an interesting journey for the Kansas City Chiefs this season, for sure. And now all of a sudden they've strung together 4 wins in a row. They're back in Arrowhead for this one. And that's why they're probably 9.5-point favorites coming into this one. I guess maybe the interesting one is, what's the backfield going to look like for the Denver Broncos? We know Melvin Gordon is being listed as doubtful with a hip injury, so we could get Javonte Williams in more of a bell cow role. Mm-hmm. Javonte Williams has looked pretty good when he's been given the ball. He's a great tackle breaker. The Kansas City Chiefs are decent against the run, and their defense as a whole has been better lately, but it's going to be a little bit interesting, especially if you're looking at that 9.5-point spread.
You know what? I'm a big Javonte Williams truther. I have him in my auction league, and just when I'm out of the playoffs, he gets the ball all the time. Yes. It's just great. It's fantastic.
I have a lot of Javonte Williams stock this year, guys, and finally it's getting put to the test today, and I need the win this weekend in my leagues, too.
Yeah, I hear you, man. We'll see what happens. I'm going to keep him for next year. We'll see if he has a better year. Hopefully, get rid of Melvin Gordon, please! But enough of my fantasy football team. But as far as the Monday Nighter goes, this is the matchup of the week, right? We got the Bills against the New England Patriots, and the Patriots lead the AFC East, the first matchup of the two between these two clubs. Man, I really like how New England is trending in this game. What are the bookmakers telling us?
Yeah, I'll tell you this. I'm personally lamenting the fact that we have to wait all the way to Monday night for this one, because it is game of the week for sure. You know, the Pats right now, they're 2.5-point underdogs, which sounds kind of crazy because they've won six in a row. They're 2.2 on the money line. The Bills, I think we can all agree, they've been a little inconsistent this year. They're 1.71 on the money line. Maybe if you're looking for some value on that Monday night game, the Pats at 2.5-point underdogs, you can't go wrong. I'm going to be curious to see if that line shifts a little bit more towards almost a pick 'em at this point, because it does really feel like either of these teams could win this one.
You're listening to The People Show. We're joined by Matt Lee of BCLC and proud supporter of the Dud Sorda brand as well. Looking sharp in that T-shirt, Matt, I got to say.
Yes, it came in the mail this morning. I ripped it open. I have to put it on right away. I'm definitely wearing it throughout the entire weekend.
Well, thank you very much for your support. All right, before we let you go, F1, there's two races left. The one in Saudi Arabia goes this weekend. What are the odds telling us about the championship hopefuls? Max Verstappen, Lewis Hamilton. Lewis is trailing, but is he the favorite? It feels like he is.
Lewis Hamilton is the favorite. He's at 1.49. Verstappen's at 3.15 right now. I know there's a little bit of a feud going on between those two guys, but in terms of this particular race this weekend in Saudi Arabia, it is Lewis Hamilton that is the favorite. And in terms of the Drivers' Championship odds overall, Hamilton at 1.67, Verstappen at 2.15. So the gap is a little bit closer overall.
Matt, we appreciate the time as always. Have a great weekend.
You too, guys.
There is Matt Lee of BCLC.
Be a player. Bet on hockey like never before with Play Now Sports, your local BC sportsbook.
Breaking news.
Some breaking news. The Canucks making a transaction.
Mm. Oh.
Bit of an interesting one. Canucks loan Travis Hamonic to Abbotsford. So, fresh off getting recalled, Travis Hamonic has been loaned back to Abbotsford.
It's not your worst breaking news, but when you say Canucks transaction amidst what's going on right now, come on, man. That's a bit of a flea flicker you threw there.
Yeah.
I'm kind of confused by the whole thing. Like, did I read this right? Travis Hamonic is going back to Abbotsford? Didn't they just call him up? What's happening?
Okay, so it's interesting because I had a conversation with somebody today about Travis Hamonic. I was trying to figure out, okay, when he comes back, what do you do, you know, as far as, you know, who comes out of the lineup or whatever? And I was told when Hamonic is ready, maybe it's Hamonic that comes out of the lineup. And I kind of took it as a joke and took it as, okay, well, maybe they don't want to mess with the winning lineup. And that's kind of what I was told. It's like, hey, right now, the way the team is playing, you know, Travis is most likely going to go with the same defense. So I'll check in on this again and we'll, you know, get to this a bit more at 5 o'clock. But my guess would be is that they're not going to play him. He's been sick too. And when I asked around, what I was told too is that he's not quite up to speed after getting the flu and he's kind of been sick the last little while. So he's not really ready to play. And the Canucks now have the option to send him down and they're taking advantage of it. That would be my guess, but we'll look into it.
All right. So that's the latest with the Vancouver Canucks. Travis Hamonic loaned to Abbotsford. We'll try to get a little bit more details on that. Dan Riccio, Satyar Shah, and Randeep Janda. All right, it's time for Not Saying, Just Saying here on The People's Show. Hit that music, Joel. Here on a Friday, 650 on the Dunbar Lumber text line. Get your texts in to the Dunbar Lumber text inbox. I'm not saying the Oklahoma City Thunder are bad. I'm just saying How the heck do you lose by 60? What? I didn't even know that. 70 points?
70 plus. 73.
73 points last night.
Even the Grizzlies didn't lose that bad.
Guys.
And the Grizzlies beat them.
Ja Morant wasn't playing. The best player on the opposition was not even playing, and they still lost by 73.
They took it easy on him.
152-79. Like, is there a mercy rule? Can we just have a mercy rule at some point?
The best part of all of this, though, was going through the OKC Thunder's Twitter after and anything they sent out, like getting back to work tomorrow or something. Go read those mentions, man. The mentions are the best part of that game. People just losing it.
Well, that team, they have a lot of draft picks. You got a lot of draft picks.
They got a couple of Canadians there. We got to support those guys.
I love
Lou Dort's good, man.
Dort's great, and I love Shai Gilgeous-Alexander, man. I love his game.
At least they got those two guys.
Yeah, but that's pretty much it.
Yeah, that's it. That was my...
How do you lose by 73 points? I don't care who's on your team. Jackie Moon could be on your team. You don't lose by 73 points.
Dan Riccio could be on your team. No, never mind.
No.
I mean, I'm feisty, you know? So
you can be as feisty as you want.
If you're getting dunked on, it doesn't matter how feisty you are. All right, I got one here.
Yeah, probably not.
I'm not saying the Canucks just beat two AHL-level teams. I'm just saying they're about to play an actual NHL team next. Like, it was nice being in Montreal, guys. It was nice being Ottawa.
Can you believe Montreal made the Stanley Cup final last year?
No, man. They look like a knockoff version, like a flea market version of their team from last year.
And that's the team you want to be like. The Habs.
The flea market version.
Vincent Texan. I'm not saying I like breaking news. I'm just saying that was bad breaking news.
Welcome to the Dan Riccio experience, all right?
What? It's Canucks news. It's breaking news.
Your track record.
You can chirp me for Dmitry Kulikov. You can't chirp me for this one, Randy.
But that's on your resume. You just don't get like, we don't wipe out that record. That's on you, man.
It was real breaking news, okay?
Here's another one.
Yeah,
Jane Ladysmith coming in regards to that. Not saying this was worse than the Ian Cole trade breaking news. Just saying this was worse than the Ian Cole trade breaking news. You did the Ian Cole trade when he was traded to Minnesota as well. Unbelievable.
Torgi, I'm not saying I'd love to see Dan get dunked on. I'm just saying it might be the greatest thing in the history of sports.
Ooh. We'll make it happen. I think Robert Sacra's in town.
Yeah.
UFE. Maybe we can make it happen. A redo of the Chara photo. With an even taller guy.
Yep.
You don't sound like you're a fan of that.
No. Nope. Mike and Tawasin. Not saying, just saying, that breaking news was a fugazi. How was it a fugazi? Travis Hamonic got loaned down to the Abbotsford Canucks.
The actual information, sure, but the way you phrased it, the Canucks have made a transaction. You know what you did. You know what you did.
Phrasing!
Isn't that part of the suspense, though?
It's not like... Yeah, for me and you. I don't know if the listener clearly doesn't feel that way.
It's not like people everywhere are waiting on some kind of big news around the Canucks. Some form of big transaction.
Yeah, and I don't know, man. I don't foresee anything big coming from this. But we'll see. We'll see. I sent a few notes out. We'll see.
I'm going
to have an update for you guys just after 5.
All right.
I like this one from Rager. Not saying Hamonic isn't going to Abbey. I'm just saying he's going back to Abbey. Abbey.
I like it. This one, unsigned. I'm not saying Dan's breaking news was lame. I'm just saying the Canucks may be making a play for Cale Craig.
Cale Craig, let's go. This one, unsigned from earlier. I'm not saying I can't wait till the Canucks finally get a new GM. I'm just saying I'm going to celebrate with a huge bowl when they finally put betting out of our misery. Like bowl of cereal? Or maybe not.
I think it means something else.
French toast crunch?
No, Dan.
I like this here.
Pineapple Express. Okay.
Yes, there you go.
Not saying, just saying. This is from Dex. Breaking news, my dog has been sent down to the basement for barking too much.
Oh, poor dog.
Why the basement? He probably just wants attention.
What kind of dog do you have,
Kind of like you with that breaking news.
If it's a husky, I understand, Dex. If it's a husky, I get it.
But you guys told me anything Canucks is breaking news.
Not anything. Not anything.
It's Canucks news.
Yeah. Oh, Will from Salmon Arm. I'm not saying, but I'm just saying you guys suck.
Hey, Will.
Look what you did, Dan.
Look at what you've done to us.
Breaking news, Dan stinks. What the hell is French Toast Crunch? Have you not? Has Rager never had French Toast Crunch?
Okay, don't get into after milk. We don't need that conversation. Mm.
Yeah, and JD and Coquitlam.
It makes great after milk.
JD and Coquitlam, it's called Cinnamon Toast Crunch Reach, not French Toast Crunch.
What? There's two. French Toast Crunch and Cinnamon Toast Crunch.
Is this another Ontario thing, like having milk in a plastic bag?
No, French Toast Crunch is a thing. Has nobody else had French Toast Crunch?
No, I kind of graduated from that phase of from cereals a long time ago.
I can't believe that nobody's had French Toast Crunch.
I you know what? I will say I do enjoy.
Like, they're two separate cereals, yes. Cinnamon Toast Crunch and French Toast.
Yeah, I know the box. I know. Okay. I don't remember the last time I've had it, though. I'll
it's
be honest.
Delicious. If you're looking for a sugar fix.
No, Dodzorda, come on.
All right, that's not saying, just saying everyone turned their radios up to be disappointed with the breaking news.
Yes.
You made the People Show citizens very, very angry and disappointed.
You played yourself.
Yeah. I played them.
And then in turn,
yes,
you played yourself.
Because it blew back on you.
And now you feel sad for doing it.
No, I don't.
Eddie and Eastman. Breaking news. 650 has made a transaction. Dan has left the chat.
It was Canucks news. So I don't know what else you want me to say. Travis Hamonic loaned to the Abbotsford Canucks.
There's a lot of Dan hate coming on the Texan box right now. We got one from Lee from South Surrey. Not saying you shouldn't ask Robert Sacre to dunk on Dan. I'm just saying Muggsy Bogues could do the job.
I think Muggsy can dunk.
He's a little older now.
Yeah.
But, man, you get hops like that, I don't think you lose him overnight. He could probably still dunk on a a regulation hoop.
Maybe. How old is Muggsy Bogues now? Like 55?
Yeah, actually, never mind. Well, you might have to lower it tonight, too.
Keith the Water Guy. French Toast Crunch is good, but Crave is much, much better.
Okay.
No, I had Crave recently. That's
really?
Too much chocolate, man. No. After like two bites, you're just like, all right, I get this.
Anthony Coquitlam backs up Reach. French Toast Crunch is a thing and miles better than cinnamon.
There you go. 100% it is. All right. It's the People's Show. Coming up, why do bad teams stay bad? We often use that as, it's almost become a cliche of sorts, but you see it in the NFL a lot. Why do bad teams stay bad? You see it in the NHL. You see it across sports. Why can't certain teams get out of their own way? Is Vancouver one of them?
Yeah.
We'll have that discussion next on the People's Show, Sportsnet 650.